News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 8.07 on your Thursday morning. Things move a little bit slow out there. That's okay. A lot of you got the day off, not in a big rush to get anywhere, maybe the day off from work too, so that's good. Just enjoy yourself. Take it easy. We'll be back into the swing soon enough after the New Year's, maybe for some of you beginning next week too, you're back on the job. But good to have you along. The conversation this hour allows you to give us a call if you want to and be part of it, 251-343-0106. That, of course, is also our text line. We're going to get to a number of things here this morning.
Yeah, we sure will, because there was news even over the holiday. Hopefully you didn't spend too much of your Christmas watching Fox News or anything of that nature, and you were able to relax and be with family and say, hey, I'll listen to Mobile Mornings tomorrow and
I'll
see what
up.
I missed. That's the plan. Also, I caught some heat this Christmas Eve and Christmas for the contest, Alabamian of the Year, as we announced our winner on Monday. And, you know, I'm sorry for holding a free and fair election, but the winner of Alabamian of the Year ended up being the Midtown Mobile Owls that have been attacking people. The Midtown Mobile Attack Owls, quite the contingent that was voting for the Owls every single round of Alabamian of the Year voting, and they carried through the final, and they ended up winning Alabamian of the Year. And I understand on Midday Mobile there were some shots maybe thrown this way. He referenced maybe, if I remember correctly, Bodie McBoatface, the time that who was it? They asked the internet to name their new boat, and of course the name the internet came up with was Bodie McBoatface.
So who was that? I forget who that was.
That's kind of become a warning to the online world. Like, if you hold a poll, people
you don't know what's going to happen. It's a free and fair election, mm-hmm. like you were saying, and yeah. You have every right ahead of time, during the election, and afterwards to assess it that way, because that's what it was. I was here. I watched you do it.
Yeah.
And I watched the votes come in, and we both, you know, raised eyebrows a little bit, maybe, yeah. when the Owl won, or the Owls, whatever they were. And, you know, I'm quite acquainted with that story because
you were here.
And I was there.
You visited. That's right. I forgot you went to the scene of the crime.
Magnolia. Let's see. Was that Azalea and Old Shell? Mm-hmm. One of the crime scenes where the Owls came out and I think took his iPod. Right?
Yeah. I thought you were going to say I for a second. Yeah, it took his earpod that earpod. He was listening to the Owls. So you went out and tried to find them and they didn't show up. When we try to get this award to them, we'll see if we have better luck with the Owls showing up.
Yeah. And also, it was as clear. It was one of those crisp, clear days. So you can say that was part of my strategy as an investigator.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be, you know, low clouds hanging and there's the owl, but I don't see him.
Right.
No, this was, you could see for miles and there was no attack owl that day.
Yeah.
At the site where he was, the gentleman was attending.
Now, the thing about owls is they like the nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
So I would maybe next time try to go at night or early. Well, you can't go early because we're working. But
you think I'm some sort of, I had to muster up the courage to go at noon. So you think I'm going to try to pick a fight with an owl in the middle of the night?
Yeah, that's their home field.
That's exactly
at night.
Right.
So congratulations to the Owls, the 2024 Alabamians?
Alabamians
of the year. Not the first animal to win. We had the squirrels in Bienville Square that won a few years ago, but congratulations to them. Also want to thank, we got several holiday gifts this year from listeners, and I want to thank all of them, but Jason, I came to the desk Monday, saw a box that said Pappy on it. And I was like, no way. Pappy Van Winkle. And it ended up being Pappy Bourbon Balls, and they are good. So I want to thank Jason. Left yours on your desk in there, Dan.
That's
so
great.
You get a chance to get after it a little bit later.
All right.
But hope everyone out there had a Merry Christmas. And, yeah, a lot to get to. I love this annual thing here with Rand Paul. And I think they still put out, what do they call it, the pork book that is just all of the wasteful government spending that has been passed into bills with pork, right? It's just all this extra fat that they add into the bills that need to pass.
Richard Shelby would have been removed from office by the new Doge pair.
Yeah.
They would.
Oh, his hands were all over the pork book,
yeah,
for
yeah,
sure,
yeah.
When he was in office. Well, Rand Paul, he does this every year, his annual Festivus report on government waste. And for 2024, he cited more than $1 trillion in government waste, his yearly accounting of frivolous government spending, It's a scathing editorial of the absurd federal projects done under the guise of the fictitious holiday, made popular, of course, by that Seinfeld episode.
Yeah, I mean, this is when you air your grievances during Festivus. So
that's what Paul was doing. He said, I have a lot of problems with federal spending, and now it's time to hear about them all. And he noted the national debt increased $2 trillion this year alone. We're now up to $36 trillion in national debt and on pace to increase at least $2 trillion every year for the next decade. He said, I'm highlighting a whopping $1.8 trillion. That's over $1 trillion in government waste, including things like ice skating drag queens, a $12 million Las Vegas pickleball complex.
$12 million for pickleball?
$4.8 million spent on Ukrainian influencers. So just influencers, online influencers in Ukraine, they've given nearly $5 million to, and more. No matter how much money the government has wasted, politicians keep demanding more. And he mentioned the DOGE, Department of Government Efficiency, and Elon and Vivek's pledge to eliminate government waste. Rand Paul said, as always, taking the path to fiscal responsibility is often a lonely journey, but I've been fighting government waste like DOGE before DOGE was cool, and I will continue my fight against government waste this holiday season. Some of the others, hundreds of millions listed in misused COVID PPP funds.
Of course.
The Department of Health and Human Services spent $419,000 to determine if lonely rats seek cocaine more than happy rats. They spent $3 million on girl-centered climate action in Brazil. Nearly $300,000 to create safe spaces for bird-watching groups. And also a $123,000 to teach the youth in Kyrgyzstan how to go viral.
How much money?
$123,000 to teach the youth in Kyrgyzstan, I don't even know if I'm saying that right, how to go viral.
Why do we care?
I don't know. That's the government waste part of this. Why do we care?
Wow. So to make them like more effective on TikTok or something like that, Instagram?
I guess.
Make them more popular in middle school?
And what we've seen, and you know what this really, a lot of this comes back to, not all of it, certainly. I mean, spending money to find out if lonely rats want coke more than happy rats, cocaine that is. Mm-hmm. But things like that with other countries, the end goal, I believe, is usually just to put enough people in these countries that you eventually could create an uprising if you needed to. So you put $120,000 to teach the children in Kyrgyzstan how to go viral. You're hoping maybe 10, 15 years from now, they will have gone viral enough that they can run a legitimate coup and put in whoever the CIA wants in charge of Kyrgyzstan.
We'd only do studies in nations that we oppose their leaders or policies.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that's the exact case. Like, there's probably studies going on places we don't care about. But when you see weird things like that, for me, it's like, well, why do we need a tentacle in Kyrgyzstan? Yeah. And the only answer would normally be, so the CIA will have a foothold in that country.
That seems to be the only answer. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. Also, we're going to talk about we'll get to the break here in a little bit, but when we get out of it and get back to you all, 251-343-0106, feel free to text us or call. We'd love to have you call in this morning. But this it's just amazing when you look over this great land of ours, this amazing nation. But my goodness, the way people think in some states is not nearly the way that we see situations in Alabama. And especially now you see that there's been almost a, you know, the culture's kind of caught up. Trump wins by a landslide, no longer a disgrace to vote for the man, no longer falling for all the left-leaning media. They're kind of out the window. And yet, when we tell you what's going on in Oregon, think of Steve Marshall trying to pull this off in Alabama. Mm-hmm. It's got to do with Oregon and the way they're looking at their sanctuary cities and the new czar boss, Tom Homan.
Yeah.
Of course, he's not having any of it with people trying to take care and maybe even hide the illegals.
Yeah, I don't think Homan, the incoming border czar, I don't think he took any Christmas leave, did he? He seemed to be going around and doing the interviews and talking about his big plans to deport millions of illegal immigrants. And, you know, we've seen challenger after challenger kind of step up to the plate, right? Was it either the Denver mayor or Gavin Newsom were first up to bat, where they said, we're not just going to let Homan come in and do what he plans to do. And for the Denver mayor, Homan said, well, I'll just arrest him, too.
Yeah.
If he's harboring illegals, that's illegal in itself, so he can go to jail, too. regardless.
And he was quick about that. I mean, these guys are they're barking, but is there going to be any bite there? I don't know. But I mean, wasn't Gavin Newsom? How recently was he in China meeting with Xi?
Yeah, he
maybe
did
a month ago.
It wasn't long ago, was
no.
it? It was before the election, I think.
Okay,
or maybe it was right after. But he had Xi come to California when he went to San Francisco.
Yeah.
Last year, I think, or maybe early this year, and then Newsom returning the favor. But this Homan, I mean, he seems to be built different. That's what the kids say. He's just built different. He's taken on all comers. It'll be interesting to see if he does end up with, what was the Denver mayor was saying, Tiananmen Square kind of moment, where they will just have citizens of the state of Colorado standing in the way and keeping ICE from coming in and deporting these illegals. I have a feeling he would fold pretty quickly, because you look at the numbers, there's a lot of people in Colorado who are ready for the illegal immigrants to go. Well.
Yeah, and again, they're kind of spotlighting, trying to round up those who have got a criminal element in their past or their recent past or since they've been here or wherever they're... I mean, they're doing it in a systematic sort of way. So who are you... Are you not interested at all in protecting your own citizens?
Well, look at that animal in New York.
Yeah.
I mean, set a woman on fire and then sat there while she burned. And there were a lot of other New Yorkers and law enforcement that walked by without helping, if you saw the video. Maybe we'll get into that. But this was an illegal immigrant who started that fire and then began fanning the flames with his own shirt.
So okay, maybe I didn't seek to see it, with as much diligence as some of you.
Well, it was Christmas. I hope nobody watched it, but I watched it.
What I would have come across on YouTube was the news reports of it, and the news reports didn't show everything, and maybe I don't want to see everything, but in any event, So again, the idea is to get illegals back to where they're from, and with a, in all caps, we're trying to get the criminals back to get them out of our, beyond our borders, so we can live in a with less criminal element around us. I mean, story after story, we've seen them, and of course, that's just fanning the flames. I get it, but those stories are not made up; they're real.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine anybody that wouldn't want to be on the side of ICE.
No, but they're out there, so I can't wait to hear what this Oregon political leader had to say. Don says, good morning, Dan and Dalton. Hope you all had a wonderful Christmas with family and friends. Hey, Dalton, the water pick also works great on getting earwax out of your ear.
Oh.
It's a pretty powerful stream they've got there, Don. I'm not sure if I'm ready to try that.
I'd think that's not wise. I mean, you could do some busted eardrum kind of thing.
819, more Mobile Mornings on the way. Join the text line or phones, 251-343-0106.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings, 823. Just when you thought things were getting back to normal. Three steps forward, one step back, I guess. Oregon's top law enforcement officer replaced this name. The name is, she's the AG out there, Ellen Rosenblum. Replace that with Alabama's Steve Marshall and see if this story makes any sense at all.
Okay.
So she's rolling out what she calls the Bilingual Sanctuary Promise Community Toolkit to help residents refresh their knowledge about a law that was passed back in 1987. That was... that every person has the right to live, work, play, and learn safely in Oregon, period.
That's not
said.
A great acronym. The bipartisan, what is it? Bipartisan?
Bilingual Sanctuary Promise Community Toolkit.
BCPCT. Not very, doesn't roll off the tongue.
It's almost dirty. So Oregon lawmaker, then Rocky Barilla's HB 2314, that was in response to several raids by INS, the U.S. Immigration and Naturalization Service. This is way, way back in the 80s and in 2003, and the law is largely considered the first sanctuary state policy in the country. And now you have to have this toolkit so you know exactly what's going on. You see these ICE guys making raids and all. There's a 1-800 hotline.
There's a process on dealing with ICE in Oregon.
Right. And like what to look out for, what ICE guys dress like.
Okay.
And so when you see this coming on, you can contact a city council member or a representative and say this is unjust.
Hmm.
So this is Tom Homan. He's, of course, the new border czar, and he means business. Holman talking over the weekend.
Well, look, open borders are not humane. The only thing on that border right now that is humane are the men and women wearing that green uniform. They save thousands of lives every year. I've seen these men and women give CPR to babies that were thrown into the river by the cartel, because when they're chasing the boat of a smuggling load, it's what the cartel members do, throw the baby in the water, then the border patrol have to jump in the water and save that baby rather than arresting the smuggler. Open borders cause death.
Because they're talking about this thing like this is inhumane, where you're treating these people, even if they are criminals here in the States or if they were criminals where they were from. And Holman points out that if you want inhumane, we've seen inhumane.
Yeah.
It's the open borders.
Well, that's just, you know, that's one of those stories that two different groups of people look at things entirely two different ways. They had that story that came out last week or the week prior that the deaths at the Rio Grande crossing were way higher than anyone had thought. And so, you know, half of America looks at that and says, oh, man, why don't they just make it easier for them to cross? And then the other half say, well, don't cross. Dangerous for a reason.
Right. They're
trying to keep people out and away and on that side of the border.
And all the drugs and all the human trafficking and all this is going on. It's not just not people who lived through a landslide in Uruguay. You know, this is all kinds of stuff that we would rather not have again. Here's Holman.
And that's just what open borders does. When President Trump had the most secure border of my lifetime, illegal immigration down 90%. When 90% less people were coming, how many babies weren't dying? How many women weren't being sexually assaulted? How many no-inspected terrorists didn't make in the country? How many pounds of fentanyl didn't get in the country to kill Americans? Secure borders saves lives. But it's and that's where the humanitarian piece comes into place.
So this is the Oregon attorney. It's not just like an opinion of some guy on the corner.
Top cop in Oregon.
Top cop in Oregon. And he is coming out with the Sanctuary Promise Community
Toolkit. She is,
right? She is. I'm sorry. Sanctuary Promise Community Toolkit to alert everybody, be on the lookout, and let's make sure that our immigrants who are here illegally can remain, are safe, and these immigrants who some are terrorists and some are criminals from wherever they're from or they've actually committed crimes here in Oregon. We don't want anybody to mess with them. And they're getting some, there's some, I guess it was in New York City, that some of the folks who are part of the sanctuary city in New York City are receiving better benefits than the homeless that live and are citizens of New York City.
Yeah, that's been one of their main complaints up there, right? And moving kids out of schools in order to hold more immigrants, that's been an issue as well. Now, Holman, he also said that they're going to need some money to kickstart these mass deportations. And I was wondering about that a lot last week with, if you missed it, I guess it was over the weekend and beginning of this week that the spending bill, the holdover bill, ended up passing the House, then Senate, and then was signed by Biden, begrudgingly, I believe, but signed nonetheless. And part of that push for Trump was to do away with the debt limit, right? And some fiscal conservatives took serious issue with that, especially Chip Roy, the Republican in Texas, because, you know, they go out talking about limiting government waste and bring us back into a trade surplus rather than a trade deficit, and then you're asked to do away with the debt limit, which is, you know, kind of the opposite, right, you would think. But the way the Trump team is putting this out there is, listen, there's going to be an initial cost to getting all of these programs up and running. And we need to put in that initial cost in order for things to start working correctly, like and save money in the long term.
An investment.
So Holman says they'll need $86 billion from Congress in order to initiate the deportations. He said while the plan's expensive initially, it will save taxpayers money in the long run. Plan includes increasing detention beds to 100,000 and focusing, like Dan said, on deporting illegal immigrants who have committed crimes, as Trump has vowed to start the largest deportation operation in American history on his first day back in office. That's a big ask from the Trump team. Hey, you know, we ran on fiscal responsibility, but in order to get there, we need to do away with the debt limit.
Mm-hmm.
And they've pushed that back with this bill. They're going to ask for the same thing in a couple months. You wonder if some Republicans might go along with them or continue to push back like Chip Roy.
There's definitely Republicans that will push back to the end on that. Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings.
Thank you, Kane. 8:34 here on FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Hope everyone out there had a wonderful Christmas holiday. This segment brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. I guess this is as good a time as any to give 1-800-GOT-JUNK a call, as maybe you've been left with some extra Christmas mess after having folks over. Maybe you got some junk left over just from yesterday and the day prior. 1-800-GOT-JUNK. They don't care when that junk started piling up. They'll come out and make it disappear. And they've been doing fantastic work here on the Gulf Coast for over 16 years now at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. All you have to do is point. They'll be in and out in no time, and you can get on with your day. Over 300 five-star reviews for 1-800-GOT-JUNK on Google. And this one left by Ashley just a couple months ago. It said, awesome service and responded very quickly with same-day service. I live in the city of Mobile and recently did a bathroom remodel. Had lots of construction debris. Also needed to clean out our shed, including a deep freezer, some Power Wheels kids' riding toys, a few baby walkers, cardboard, some wood, a metal tub. Called and got a free estimate with an in-person visit, and they came back with an affordable quote. An hour later, all the stuff we needed gone was taken. Ashley continues, we'll definitely be using them in the future, and we'll refer to anyone who needs quick, reliable, and affordable removal of most of the stuff you need gone. Thank you, Trey and Gant. And what Ashley says right there is the truth. They're great at what they do, making that junk disappear. So to set up your appointment, you can call the number 1-800-GOT-JUNK, or it's just as easy to set up your appointment online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com.
All righty. To the text line, 251-343-0106. Name the season, the holiday, doesn't matter. Ricky, as upbeat as ever, he sends me the, and you, this is the end. It's like a little meme. This is the end.
That's not a fun meme.
No.
I thought memes were supposed to be fun.
This one is not. This is the end. That's all I know.
Oh, boy. Wow.
Don, you know, some of his texts are long and drawn out and everything. That's right to the point.
Yeah, I kind of like that. Well, I don't like the message it sends. Don says, by the way, I did shoot a nice deer over the weekend and will be processing and bringing you guys some venison jerky.
Ooh,
thanks, Don. He says, maybe even pick up my Dr. Bill's almanac. I won last Friday. Maybe I can make it 2 weeks in a row. Having the last almanac of 2024 would be a collector's item for us Dr. Bill fans.
Yeah.
I think we still have some laying around here.
Yeah. Okay. So he won last week. Good for him.
Congrats, Don. Michael said the undies for a dad for Christmas is a must. I don't think there's a dad out there that doesn't appreciate a new set to replace their holy ones. Yeah, and I got some boxer briefs this weekend. I'm pretty fired up about it.
You know.
Some armachillos.
This is, some would call it the holy season, but not in that way. You don't. I went to Target myself. Because it's a sensitive purchase, you know?
No one knows you better than you.
Thank you.
Right?
So I went to Target myself and I grabbed, grabbed some newbies to, strap up for the new season.
Bring in the new year.
2025.
Yeah, see, and this is odd for me. And I know we were going to talk about, the governor's race and mayoral race coming up. But for some reason, when it comes to socks and underwear, I do worse shopping for my, like, whenever I get gifted.
Yeah,
some new boxer briefs or some socks. They end up being way better than what I would have bought for myself.
Really?
So I don't know if there's a medical term for that or what, but I have a lot of issues buying the correct socks or briefs for myself.
So
I wasted money on these.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in need, then do you have to kind of break it to your wife?
Yeah,
you need to hit them all.
I have
all.
To petition for someone to go out and buy me some. That's exactly right.
That's fine.
Also, congratulations to Milry for winning. What was it they won? The Alabama's Best Christmas Decorations Contest on AL.com. John Sharp had a good write-up. The city of Milry, specifically the Roy Chapman Sportsplex and Walking Trail in Milry. And John Sharp wrote this up. The Milry Annual Christmas in the Park event. They achieved a remarkable milestone, winning AL.com's first ever poll for the best Christmas decorations in Alabama. And Milry able to edge out larger cities, Fort Payne and Opelika. And this was a voting contest, and Milry had 224 more votes than Fort Payne for best Christmas decorations. Huh. So I have not been out to the Milry Christmas in the Park. And they did this regionally, so Milry had to beat out some other cities from the
Mario.
South, yeah, they had the South region, so they beat Andalusia, Fairhope, and Foley. And, of course, Andalusia and Fairhope, actually all three, Andalusia, Fairhope, and Foley, have pretty well-known Christmas lights and decorations. So congratulations, Milry. I got to check that out.
Me too. So I'm looking at the map. It is well into Washington County. So, you know what I mean? It's the northern edge. You know better than I do. Mm-hmm. It's off the beaten path a little bit. It's not right on a main highway, is it?
I don't think so. It might be off of, well, I don't know. But you could probably see the lights from miles away.
at least an hour and a half drive from Mobile would be my guess. Let me know on the text line, because I might just do that. Now, mm-hmm. are we talking about... This is what the town did, the municipality.
Yeah, so it says in John Sharp's article, volunteers start decorating in August, stringing over 1 million lights through the mile-long trail, and everything is free except food. So when you get out there, and I don't know if they've already drawn this to a close with Christmas having come and gone, but it's on the list for next year, this Millery Christmas in the Park.
Absolutely. Okay, Millery, Alabama.
Mm-hmm. Christmas in the Park, and yeah. I think you'll find it there. 840-251-343-0106. Some people commenting on my new undies. Thank you. Those keep rolling in. Let's talk a little bit about the elections we have coming up, because 2025, as far as elections, it will be the year of the municipal election.
Yes, it will.
I saw Sherry Sullivan saying she's running for re-election for mayor of Fairhope. The Mobile mayoral race might be the biggest thing we have going here for 2025. But then right behind that, the gubernatorial in 2026, and we've spent a little time talking about this. You had that poll that I talked about early this week that featured just two names, Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth and State Ag and Industry Commissioner Rick Pate. And Ainsworth, of course, doing better than Pate as far as early polling goes for the Republican primary. But that would be obvious, right? Because Ainsworth has kind of been laying the groundwork for a run for governor for a while now, and making appearances across the state.
And he's also dancing the line a little bit about being, Ivy can't run again, so she's not really an opponent.
Mm-hmm.
But there's occasionally he'll kind of get out of bounds on what Ivy's thinking and go out on his own. Then he makes up with Ivy so they can travel in the same plane together, whatever.
Especially during COVID, it seemed that he saw the state was not happy with Ivy's performance.
True.
And he pushed back more during COVID, I think, than he has during the rest of the Ivy term in office. But just you could kind of tell that groundwork had been laid. So I think it would be a surprise if Ainsworth did not run. But Bill Britt with the Alabama Political Reporter putting out a list here. And I know, you know, whatever you think of Bill Britt, he's still a political analyst in the state. So I take stock in the names he puts up there. But many of these, if you just listen to FM Talk 106.5, you've heard these floated, especially in the Jeff Poor show. But
well, yeah, I would take the opinion of Jeff Poor
over anybody,
100 times better over Bill Britt. I'm not criticizing the man. Well, maybe I am, but I'm just saying you can listen beginning at 9 o'clock and get a pretty good idea what's going on.
Exactly. But Britt puts the story out and he says some of the names floated, and let me know what you think of these.
Okay.
Ainsworth, of course.
Yeah.
Attorney General Steve Marshall.
I've heard that.
Ag and Industry Commissioner Rick Pate, mm-hmm. he says, are among the likely candidates. Each bring substantial political experience and name recognition. Adding to the intrigue, he writes, speculation swirls around Senator Tommy Tuberville's possible entry. And Jeff brought that up Friday. He said he wouldn't be surprised to start to see that name pop up more and more often. Meanwhile, Bill Britt writes, former officials like Kent Davis, the former Veterans Affairs Commissioner, and John Merrill, the former Secretary of State, are also reportedly considering bids, further broadening the field. And he writes, if history serves as a guide, announcements may come sooner than later. The last gubernatorial race that was open in 2010 saw major contenders like Robert Bentley, Bradley Byrne, and Tim James declare more than a year in advance. He said the election cycle demonstrated the critical advantage of an early start in what is typically a costly and highly competitive contest. Well, we haven't really seen an early start yet officially, unless you consider, like I said, that groundwork that Ainsworth's been laying for months. But really, no one's saying, I'm running for governor, and it starts right now.
So that's, no one's done that.
I don't think anyone's done that.
And so Merrill, I think, is an interesting addition to this list now. I don't know that he would win governor, but he's a really talented politician, right?
Mm-hmm.
You'd agree with that.
Oh, no doubt.
I mean, he, as Secretary of State, he traveled this state to make sure. I mean, remember, he had the goal of, first of all, make sure we get the numbers correct in our
voting rolls
and on the for the 2020 census.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he promoted that, and he also wanted to make sure that as many people voted as was possible in the state of Alabama. He hustled on that, and the way he hustles is face to face, and he meets elected officials from all over the state. He's got a heck of a network, and he's earned it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Ainsworth. Well, I think they're both very political animals. Somebody stuck out there Marshall. Marshall, to me, Marshall as the Attorney General takes it all very seriously, and he acts mm-hmm. like the top cop. You
yeah.
know, he's more of an authority than Ainsworth, and certainly Merrill seem to be more jovial politicians.
Yeah, I imagine if Marshall jumps into the race, you'll see certain cities push back really hard mm-hmm. on that. Some cities he's gone around with before, like yeah. Montgomery and Birmingham.
True.
You can imagine he'd have some roadblocks put up yeah. by them. But what if Tuberville jumps in? I mean, does anyone else? If Tuberville jumps into this race, he says, I'm not seeking re-election as U.S. Senator. Instead, I'll be focusing on, you know, the state of Alabama. I want to be governor. I think he immediately commands a pretty large share of that electorate, and maybe enough of a share that if the John Merrills are looking to jump in or some of these other names, they might stay out if they see Tuberville get in, because he is a pretty dang strong candidate.
I think if Tuberville announces that he would like to be the governor and he's the first to announce it, that's going to stymie a lot of the talk or the you know, I guess they
exploration.
The exploration, the polls and everything, like, do I want to get it? Can I win this thing?
Mm-hmm.
Because of his popularity. And I think that if you have already said that you're in, and then Tuberville announces he's knocking down the fence, he wants to get in that race too, I think that, like you said, that could really leave a lot of these candidates thinking, I don't really have a shot here.
Just think of that mountain you would have to climb, because name recognition, even though some of these politicians have pretty good name recognition, none of them have Tuberville's
no.
name recognition. As far as free media, Tuberville's on Fox every day.
And
as far as the endorsement, you know he's getting Trump's endorsement.
And when you think about this too, the job that we do, the exposure that we have to state news and guests on our show, guests on Jeff Ford's show, and Sean Sullivan, of course. So these names may resonate with us, Will Ainsworth or Marshall, but to a lot of Alabamians, they're nowhere near Tuberville.
Well, just that poll that we talked about earlier this week in Ainsworth, for just Republican primary voters is who they
yeah,
polled.
Yeah, what was that number?
He had 50% unknown. Like, as far as his approval or disapproval rating.
50% didn't even know who he was or didn't know enough about him.
They weren't confident enough to say whether they approve or disapprove.
And so you would have to think a percentage of them simply don't know who the man is.
Yeah, which is kind of unbelievable to think about, right? With it being Republican primary voters that were being polled.
Yeah.
Tuberville, that number would be much, much lower. Everyone would have an opinion on him one way or the other. I guess the question is, does he want to give up that Senate seat? Because that's the creme de la creme for so many people in their mm-hmm. lives, is getting that 6-year term in Senate and then just holding on to it term after term after term. He doesn't seem to be like the rest of these politicians, and he's said that. I don't know if anyone's believed him, but if he steps out and runs for governor, that would be a pretty strong move to indicate that he means what he says when he says he hates being in D.C. But that opens us up for another Senate race. And the potential for, I don't know if we'd ever have another Doug Jones situation where a Democrat wins that seat. I find that hard to believe. But would Tuberville want to give his seat up with the potential that there's a more moderate Republican that takes that seat?
Well, some of those names that we mentioned for governor might just be that person.
Jumping over there.
If Tuberville makes it clear that he's going to be running for governor, now Will Ainsworth or even a John Merrill says, you know what? That's some heady stuff, being U.S. Senator for the state of Alabama. What they say, the club is the most exclusive club in the world, right?
Yeah.
You got two per state, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that'd be there's so much that could happen just between now and Tuberville's possible entry into the race. But if he doesn't, then probably no holds barred, pretty large contingent of candidates there.
And we're talking about Republicans, obviously.
Right.
Because...
will there be any big-name Democrats that run,
yeah.
too? That's
question. Who are the big-name Democrats in Alabama politics?
Mm-hmm.
It's 8:49 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings with Dan and Dalton, and we'll preview Jeff's show on the way. Nice people on the text line doing their best to make sure that Danny B can make it to Millery A-OK. Sean, is this our Sean? Yeah. On Highway 17, look for the traffic light. Thank you, Sean.
Should we be looking for the traffic light or the 1 million Christmas lights? Which one's easier to spot?
I don't know. Does the 1 million Christmas lights divert your attention and make that traffic light,
the most dangerous in Millery?
In Washington County.
It's very possible.
Let's see here. Columnist Paul DeMarco on the Jeff Poor Show today. That's the first 9:30, 10:30. April Marie Fogle. She is becoming like an employee of FM Talk 106.5, right?
More or less, yeah.
And former U.S. Representative Parker Griffith at 11:35 with Jeff Poor on the Jeff Poor Show, which is on the way.
Chris texting in from Orange Beach says, hope you two had a great holiday. You have to look at Tuberville this way. He is such a good politician that he has made the Bama fans forget he was an Auburn coach. Think about it.
Yeah, that's not nothing. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the mark of a good politician, yeah. Right? Don says, Millery's just north of Chatham off Highway 17. Yeah, lots of traffic. About an hour, 16 minutes from Saraland, he says. I think everything is an hour, 16 from Saraland. He writes, it definitely gives Bellengrath a run for its money. That is saying something, Don, to say that Millery gives Bellengrath a run for its money.
It won the state, right?
Yeah. The poll there from AL.com said they have the most beautiful Christmas display. So
yeah, amazing.
It's on the list for next year. As we were talking about, several things here. We talk about Festivus, the government waste, the report that Senator Rand Paul puts out every year, and some of the ridiculousness that was wasted for 2024, including the drag queen ice skaters who put on a show, a climate change themed ice skating show, yeah, drag queens.
You can leave my tickets at the box office.
I don't think it's won any awards. Well, it did. It won grant money, I guess. From
Give
the
me the old
government.
Pop-Tart bowl. I'll go to that.
So there's that. And then we were talking about Tuberville, and does he really want to give up a cushy job in the Senate where you've made it? Once you're a senator, you could just command people from there for the rest of your life.
Plus, now that you have Republicans in charge, he was getting queasy from dealing with Democrats.
Fighting all the time.
And not being able to win. And now there's a chance that they can kind of highway things through.
But, it's no secret that there are some politicians who are hanging on or barely hanging on way longer than they need to.
True.
We've seen it with Mitch McConnell, who fell and busted his face again a couple weeks ago. Saw it with Nancy Pelosi, who shattered her hip a week ago. And it just goes on and on. But I've never seen anything like this. No. We talked about it on Monday, but the Republican congresswoman from Texas, Kay Granger. Now, she's on her way out, okay? So she's lame duck. And I don't know if that's ever been more fitting for a politician to be called lame duck, because they found her residing at an independent living facility for seniors. She'd been gone for half a year, not voting. And she's in this assisted living facility.
I mean, does it not have some sort of, it's advertised as they work on dementia and memory loss is done at this place. Like, that's one of the
hallmarks
of what it is.
Yeah, so she's 81, left her post as chair, and this was a big gig she had, chair of the House Appropriations Committee. So she left in March after announcing last year she would retire at the end of this term. Her son, just Sunday, said she's been having some dementia issues late in the year. And it's good to know right now. She's been gone since June, and now we're finding out she's been in this assisted living facility. I mean, if regardless of your political stripes, if you don't think that it's ridiculous that we've had a voting member of Congress that has been just missing for half a year and was found in an independent living facility focused on their dementia. I mean, I feel terrible for her. I feel terrible for her family.
Yes.
But this just goes to show you how messed up the system is that we have some of these people just clinging on for dear life when you know they aren't in the best position to help run this country.
Well, did we not just have a president? Or do we have currently a president?
Currently.
We would have little faith in his abilities right now.
Right. She does have someone that'll be taking over for her as that congressman, and now people are saying, why don't we get a rush on that? Go ahead and put him in charge.
Wow. 8:58 FM Talk 106.5. Dan and Dalton back with you tomorrow, and the Jeff Poole Show is on the way next.